It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Sinister Story Hour, a podcast where I discuss crimes, cults, and all things sinister. The topics I discuss here may not be suitable for everybody. Listener discretion is advised.
Network. The light shines brightest on our indie podcasts.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Sinister Story Hour. My name is Steph, and I am just like the friendly neighborhood librarian that you remember back in the old days, except for I tell you stories of all things spooky, sinister, and macabre. Tonight is going to be no different. I have a missing persons case with a twist for you this evening. And a huge special thanks to CJ with Beyond the Rainbow Podcast with this episode. Please go check her out. She does great work over there at Beyond the Rainbow, telling stories of true crime, specifically from the LGBTQ plus community.
We're Malice After Midnight,
a podcast that focuses on true crime.
We want you to feel like you're part of the conversation.
And sometimes we deal with pretty dark subject matter.
But we always manage to have a good time.
She dragged the body into a closet before she bled the body out and cut it into 9 pieces.
9 pieces, okay.
Now the
Christine's
following...
Christine's counting arms and legs. There's 4, 2 arms, 2 legs.
I mean, I'm counting.
The head is a piece.
4, 5, the cut the body in half. That's 6, 7. There's 2 more pieces. I'm not sure. Maybe she cut the feet. 2, 4, 6, 8... 9, and the head, and left the body, so hands, feet, legs, arms, head, body.
Head, shoulders, knees, and toes, knees, and toes. So check us out. We're Malice After Midnight with Tina, Steve, and Christine.
I'm Edward October, creator host of October Pod, and we're both listening to Sinister Story Hour on the Darkcast Network.
This episode, as I said, started out as a missing persons case, but as I got more into it, it quickly escalated into a murder case. 2 teenage boys from Northern California who were best friends disappeared within 3 weeks of each other. Enrique Rios, a 16-year-old Hispanic boy who went by Rico, was last seen by his mom at his family home in Esparto, California, around 9 p.m. on October 16, 2016. A short time later, he had snuck out of his family home that night, and he never came back. Rico had run away before, so it wasn't like it had never happened, but he would always come back. Usually it would be the next day, but he always returned home, so it wasn't like him to not come home. Esparto is a little farming town between Sacramento and Woodland. It's closer to Woodland than it is to Sacramento, and it really didn't make much sense if Rico had wanted to leave Esparto, because he would have either needed a car, a friend with a car, or he would have had to take the bus. 16-year-old Rico didn't own a car, and CCTV footage of the Yolo County bus stop showed no evidence of Rico being there at all that evening. He did have a couple of friends with cars, however, but it still didn't make sense. Nobody understood what was going on. He really had no reason to run away. His warm clothes were left behind, as was his last paycheck. Also his California identification card and all of his other personal belongings. That to me says a lot. If you run away, the first thing you need is money, and the second thing you're going to take is your belongings. Rico mentally also seemed to be in a really good place. It really appeared like he didn't have any plans to stay out long, or else he was going to have taken his paycheck at least, and his ID. Rico also was said to have adored his little sister, and they didn't believe he would leave her for any length of time. The following day, when she saw that he was missing, Rico's mom tried calling his phone, and when he didn't pick up, she texted him, "Where are you?" Rico's mom received a couple of texts from Rico's phone. The first read, quote, "I fell asleep at a friend's house. I'm on my way to school now," end quote. The next text read, quote, "I'm going away for a while. I'm under too much pressure, but I'll be back," end quote. Rico's mom insisted those texts were not from her son. It was not his texting style, and as the mother of a teenage boy, I think we just know our kids. We know when something is off, we know when something's going on and they're not feeling quite right. So I can imagine her getting this text and just knowing that these messages are not from her son. Rico attended Cesar Chavez Community School in Woodland. He would go to classes in the morning, and then in the afternoon he would go to work at the Northern California Construction Training Program at the Yolo County Fairgrounds. This was a paid program, and honestly it sounds like a really neat opportunity for these high-risk kids. To be part of the program, you had to, number one, be enrolled through Yolo County Juvenile Probation. Rico was on probation for being involved in a fight. Number two, you must know how to work as part of a team. Number three, you must be able to get up early and get to school on time. Number four, you must be willing to work outdoors. And number five, you must be willing to work drug and alcohol free. As far as anyone close to him knew, Rico maybe smoked pot once in a while, but he never did any type of hard drugs and he wasn't much of a drinker. Some of the training they did for this program was done inside of a classroom setting, like learning how to read tape measures and other measurements, how to read blueprints, floor plans, things like that, and the students were taught math that would help them in the construction field. The students would also learn how to work as part of a crew, and one of the incentives was safety-related certificates that they could earn, and those rewards just would help the student appreciate how important safety was on a job site. And you all know I'm the friendly safety girl, so I really appreciate that. Students got the opportunity to work with masonry, roofing, welding, carpentry, laying conduit, and installing air conditioning units. So a lot of different types of hands-on work that they got experience in doing. For the first 3 weeks of Rico's disappearance, police just looked at this case as a runaway case. But then Rico's best friend, a black 17-year-old teen named Elijah Moore, went missing on November 4, 2016. Rico and Elijah attended the same school and both worked the Northern California Construction Training Program together. Elijah was on probation for the same fight Rico was involved in, and Elijah also smoked weed, but as far as it was known, he really didn't dabble in anything stronger. The day of Elijah's disappearance was the day after his birthday. He had only been 17 years old for one day. He was last known to be on Main Street in Woodland on November 4th, cashing his paycheck at a check cashing store, and he was never seen again after that. Elijah's mom reported him missing on November 6th. She was hoping he would return home, so she had waited a bit. Elijah was a mama's boy. He had never run away before, and he really had no reason to now. He was excited about going to college after graduation, and he was planning to pursue a degree in construction management. Much like Rico's mom, Elijah's mom also received a text from Elijah's phone. The text stated that he was en route to the San Francisco area. He had met a girl from there, and he was going to see her. Elijah's mom, just like Rico's mom, was very doubtful of this text, because, again, the texting style was completely different. After Elijah II went missing, Rico's disappearance was no longer considered a case of a runaway teen. Police decided that both boys were missing under suspicious circumstances, and they decided to take a further look into it. Investigators were now thinking that these two disappearances were somehow related. There were people of interest that the police had been looking at, and in fact, their persons of interest would be pulled into the Woodland Police Department several times in the next couple of years to be questioned. Then, in 2018, police finally had something more concrete on their persons of interest. In fact, one of those persons of interest really liked to talk to people and tell them about what he and three of his friends had done, almost like he was bragging. This guy was 16-year-old Jesus Campos of Woodland, California. He had told a couple of people that he and his friends killed two teenage boys and buried them, but if they told anyone, he would kill them too. Jesus Campos' friends that killed Rico and Elijah are 19-year-old Jonathan Frost, Jonathan's older brother, 25-year-old David Frost of Knights Landing, California, and 19-year-old Shondell Shannon Jr., who lived in Winters, California. It was that break in the case that allowed investigators to start painting the picture of what exactly had happened to Rico and Elijah. David Frost was a small-time marijuana dealer in Knights Landing, which was only about 15 minutes from Woodland. It would seem that the night Rico disappeared, Elijah, who knew the four guys from buying weed from them before, saw David, Shondell, and Jesus in KFC's parking lot in Woodland. Elijah had stolen a friend's pellet pistol that looked like a real gun. He put it in his waistband, and he walked up to the three guys. Elijah then put the three under gunpoint, stole 3 ounces of marijuana, which at the time was valued at about $300. Since it was David's weed, he went into a rage after Elijah stole it. He got a hold of his little brother, Jonathan, and made him come with them. Once the four young men were together later that evening on October 16th, they discussed how to get even with Elijah. David, the eldest, and the ringleader of the group wanted Elijah dead. Shondell started to talk about Elijah's buddy Rico, and before he knew it, David was encouraging Shondell to call Rico and invite him to come party with them. Rico had already snuck out of his family home, and he was hanging with his girlfriend when he got the call from Shondell. He told Shondell that he was down to party, come get him. As Rico drove off from his girlfriend's house with Shondell, David, Jonathan, and Jesus, he had no idea that that would be his last few hours on Earth. The carload drove to Knights Landing. They found a remote, rarely traveled road and turned down it. The guys in the car told Rico what had happened earlier that night with Elijah, and they told him that they wanted him to call Elijah and lure him out. Rico refused to do it. They took Rico from the car into a woodsy-type area, and they told him again to call Elijah, and Rico still would not comply. David took a large tree branch and struck Rico in his head. Soon the other guys also started to beat Rico. David then took out a gun and shot Rico. Supposedly, Rico is buried somewhere in Knights Landing. On November 4th, the four thugs, David and Jonathan Frost, Jesus and Shondell were following Elijah the morning that he went to the check cashing store in Woodland. As Elijah was walking down the street near a laundromat, David got out of the car, put a gun to Elijah, and forced him into the car's trunk. They then drove Elijah to an area outside of Woodland. The men beat, cut, and burned Elijah before hitting him with tree branches and stomping on his face with shoes. Elijah's death was not quick, and it was not painless. The four men made him suffer. They then spent 5 hours getting rid of evidence and clearing the scene the best they could. Jesus was afraid that one of the guys he had told of the crimes was going to actually talk. He lied and said David heard he had gone to the cops with information about Rico and Elijah's deaths, which wasn't true. He was hoping to scare the witness into a confession, but the witness hadn't really told anyone. Jesus told the witness to meet him and David at the laundromat. This is the exact same laundromat that Elijah had been abducted right in front of. At this point, the witness, in fear for his own life, finally went to the police. And that's how police were able to turn those persons of interest into kidnapping and murder suspects. By June 2018, Shondell, Jesus, and Jonathan were arrested, and David was already in custody for an unrelated crime. Trials started in September of 2018. Jonathan Frost, the younger of the two Frost brothers, took a plea deal. He would plead no contest to his charges of kidnapping and murder, and in return, he would not be sentenced to the death penalty or life without parole. He would also turn state's evidence against the other accused men. Which I find fascinating because he actually turned state's evidence, that means against his own brother. Also part of this plea deal was to help authorities recover Rico and Elijah's bodies. Jonathan has made two good faith efforts, but neither were successful in locating the boys. To this day, neither Rico or Elijah's bodies have been found. During Jonathan's trial, he said Elijah had asked to call his mom to say he loved her. Remember, he was a mama's boy. And his brother David told Elijah, "No, you can pray." Jonathan was sentenced to a minimum of 15 years to a maximum of life. He will be eligible for parole, and in turn, the state prosecutor will not try to block his parole. In November, the older brother David and the leader of this little group of hoodlums had his day in court. He was found guilty of murdering Rico, but it was not a first-degree murder because he didn't show premeditation of the crime. He was found guilty of first-degree murder of Elijah, however, as that murder was premeditated. He was also guilty of kidnapping both Rico and Elijah. David motioned for a retrial, and that was denied. He was sentenced to life in prison with no parole for Elijah's murder and an additional 23 years to life for Rico's. Jesus' trial started in juvenile court but was swiftly moved to adult court. Jesus and Shondell both pleaded not guilty. Both of their trials would come years later, and Shondell's was on hold because of his mental capacity. Prosecutors and his defense attorney were not really sure if he could fully understand what he had done. In September of 2019, Shondell was cleared as competent to stand trial. Both Jesus and Shondell's trials were set to take place March of this year, 2022. There has been no word if their trials were again postponed or if there was some sort of a resolution. I'll keep my eyes peeled on this case and give you an update when I find one. And if you have anything to add to that or you know anything about this case, please let me know. SinisterStoryHour@gmail.com. I am always open to hearing your suggestions for show ideas and comments, thoughts. I would love to know what you thought about this case. As always, thank you so much for listening, and I'll be back next week with another true crime story. Bye!
Darkcast Network. The light shines brightest on our indie podcasts.
Hey there, Rainbow Warriors. I'm CJ, host of Beyond the Rainbow, True Crimes of the LGBT. My episodes focus on crimes committed by and against the LGBTQ community. I've covered cases you probably have heard of, such as Matthew Shepard, Brandon Tina, and the Orlando Pulse nightclub massacre, as well as some lesser-known cases like the murder of Ray Hainish, the Australian Gay Beat murders, and the suspicious disappearance of Lisa Lynn Stone. I cover cases brought to me by listeners like Penny Brummer, who I believe was wrongfully convicted, taboo cases such as lesbian corrective rape and murder in South Africa, and Pray the Gay Away camps. I discuss gay serial killers, women who pretend to be men to hook up with other women, and trans murders. I'm opinionated and uncensored. I know I'm not everyone's cup of tea, but surely I'm someone's shot at tequila. No matter what your gender or orientation in life might be, please join me as I tackle rainbow crimes in search of unicorn justice. Remember, it's not a crime to be gay, unless you're a murderer.